Welcome on into the 9 o'clock hour here. Chris Thomas, the Night Turtle, with you for another hour. Day-Day Lewis comes your way then with Prep Sports Nation. Although, wait, is it? No, he doesn't. It's Jason Longshore tonight. It's Tuesday, right, Garrett? I'm not going crazy. I am going crazy. It's Tuesday. Yeah, Jason Longshore. Day-Day Lewis will be tomorrow. Yeah, that's my bad. Sorry, Jason. And sorry, Day-Day. I'm sorry to both of you. I screwed it up. That's my fault. 404-726-0929. We're talking all things. Hey, listen, man, there goes the we made it to 903. There goes the perfect show, right? 404-726-0929. We're talking Falcons with you. We got a couple of callers to take, and then we will let you hear from Raheem Morris. He did speak and meet the media. Not sure if it will instill any more confidence in any of y'all out there, but we shall see. Let's start with Robert. He leads us off. Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, Penix is a quitter. He quits on the plays way before the penalty or the whistle's blown. Three grounding penalties, those are quitting on the play. And last week, he was backed up to the 20, he was surrounded, and he lifted his feet and fell to his knees before the whistle. He's afraid to take a hit, and he's just a quitter. And that's not a professional. That's all I got to say.
Oh, boy. Okay, Robert. Worst take of the night goes to Robert. Guys, if you think Penix is a quitter, do you know this guy had three season-ending injuries in college, and he still managed to come back and fight his way through all of that and make his way to the NFL? That's the literal opposite definition of a quitter. Come on, man. Listen. He was terrible on Sunday. How many times do we need to say it? But to call him a quitter, I mean, come on. We have to be better than that. We have to. Come on. We can't have that be the take here, that he's a quitter. Robert, I expect more from you, man. If you're going to call the show, listen, you're entitled to your opinion. And I'll never tell you you can't have one. Everybody has one. You know what they're like. If you heard the expression, opinions are like, everybody has one, right? But Robert, come on. Quitter? No, absolutely not. Broken.
The better critique would honestly be that he didn't have a backup option. He didn't have he needs to know what his off ramp is, if you will.
And that comes down to
that's coaching.
Thank you.
Or having other players step up and do their job.
No. Coaching.
I mean, there are a lot of things. It's not one thing. It's never one thing.
You also have wide receivers.
It's never one thing.
No, but gee, you also have wide receivers that don't know where to line up. And that's happened multiple weeks in a row. The most fundamental things in football you cannot execute properly. You literally have a paid wide receiver in the NFL that does not know what he's doing on the field. Can it be worse than that? Can it be worse than that? David Sills, multiple weeks in a row, has not known what to do on an NFL field. Just in terms of fundamental assignments. Come on, man. 404-726-0929. It is absolutely embarrassing. Sam's in Atlanta. Sam.
Yeah, so the question of can they win these next three? I mean, they could on paper, hypothetically. Do I want them to? No. And I'm going to say it with my chest. I want Raheem to fail a lot more than I want this team to do well, because that's the only thing it's going to take for sleepy Arthur to see it. Oh, wait, he's too busy dance doing that little stupid fist pump dance at whatever women's soccer team.
No. We're not doing that. Absolutely not. We're not doing that. That is not a guys. These calls in the 9 o'clock hour, we're getting a little screwy here. Come on. We got to be better. Sam, I can't let you do that on the air, man. That is beyond unfair. Beyond unfair. You can't do it.
You can be mad at the owner. You can't come out here and make claims like that, guys.
We're doing a sports talk radio show. We're not here to do that. Sorry. Last two callers, please be better. 404-726-0929. Wow. We were rolling up until these last couple of calls. Yikes. 404-726-0929. All right, let's hear from Raheem Morris. First thing he was talking about, a lot of what we've been talking about tonight, that is Penix's pocket presence and his scrambling.
What we've done with him is tell him to be able to use his legs like he did, you know, a week before prior with the big long scramble versus the Patriots. That's something that you love to happen. You know, yesterday he used it a little bit when he got out the pocket and hit Drake on the scramble when the play broke down. He's kind of scrambled to his left. Drake did a nice job of shadowing and following him. He did another big scramble when he was able to hit Bijan along the sideline. You know, you like to see those things happen more, and they can happen more often because he is so athletic and he has that in his body. You know, sometimes you get out the pocket if you go the wrong way. And you not shouldn't say the wrong way. If you go away where there's not people to scramble for you, it's not going to look as good because he's a thrower first, and he's always going to look down the field to throw as opposed to just taking off using his legs at all times. And like we can get better at all those things, and that's something that he can get better at as well. And I don't know if it's necessarily pocket presence because he's very comfortable in the pocket. He loves being in the pocket. He loves going through the whole dynamic of his progressions. I just think it's sometimes, man, he can use his athleticism at times that he can really exploit people.
Okay, somewhere in the middle of that ramble, I got lost in the sauce, Rob. I don't even know what you were talking about, man. What? That was some just jumbled word salad, man. The Raheem Morris special. That was, I don't even know what that was. Like, he started off making sense, and then somewhere in the middle of that cut, he just took a left turn at Albuquerque, and then he got back on track at the end. But what was that, Rob? I literally don't know what he was talking about. Okay, we'll see if the next one's better. Raheem Morris talking about the connection between Penix and Mooney. Well, right now it's more the lack thereof.
You hate to make any excuses for any of it because nobody cares, right? It's more important that they're not having a great connection right now. You know, the connection with Drake has been outstanding, particularly over the last couple of weeks, and you wanted to look closer to that with Mooney. You know, like whether it's a really good throw on a drop or whether it's a bad throw and a miss op. You got to make those things that come together. Kind of what Zeno just alluded to is like, how do you get that stuff to happen? And the only way to do it is to practice and to go out there and do it together. And you got to have that time to do it. And they'll be out there doing those things. And like, that's all the growing pains that we're going through right now. We got to have all those things happen for us the right way. We want Mooney to go out there and be our deep threat. We want Mooney to be able to go out there and get balls in his hands, get some receptions, be able to catch and run, do some of the things he did for us in a special way last year. And we got to get those things going.
Yeah. I mean, they do. I mean, they literally don't have anybody else. That's the problem. Again, we just talked about it. David Sills can't freaking line up right. Casey Washington got buried because he can't catch the ball. There's nobody else. There's nobody out there.
Did you see the stat where you actually line up every single one of the Falcons wide receiver stats except for Drake London and how he outproduces them in every single stat by himself?
Yeah, because he's the only one they throw the ball to.
Yeah, I think he has like 20 more targets or something like that than all of the other wide receivers combined. Yeah, but John Robinson's surprised. Your number two receiver.
Yeah.
Kyle Pitts is your third leading receiver, and then number four is Darnell Mooney, and he's got something like 190 yards or something. He hasn't been healthy. He hasn't been able to play. Well, it's because he had the 160, 70-yard performance against the 49ers. Outside of that, he really has not done anything.
No, he's been awful.
And what actually has been killing you, too, is the fact that Darnell Mooney is the man beater. That was his job for this team. Even Drake London, I mean, like, he's not exactly a man beater. He's just big, and he's able to use his body really effectively. You'd actually, by the numbers, he's been significantly better against zone than he has been against man. In fact, nobody on this team has been good against man at all this season.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, look at the personnel that they have.
But it's because you need Darnell Mooney, and you're really, really relying on him to do that. And that's one of the reasons why this team has really struggled. Because teams can just lock you down. And the thing is, in the NFL, if you can get locked down in man coverage, just 1v1 on every single route, then you're not going to be playing in the NFL for a very long time. That's just the nature of this game. And the Falcons have a lot of guys on this roster right now, specifically in that wide receiver room, who don't really belong as every single Sunday wide receivers, much less ones who are getting reps.
Well, when your WR2 is hurt and your WR3 is cut, it makes it pretty difficult to operate a wide receiver room, I would say. A couple more from Ra here.
And you fired your wide receiver coach. Don't forget that
too. Penix's command of the offense is great, says Ra. Okay.
I feel really great with Mike's command. We got to get everybody on the same page. Everybody has to be the same way. You know, we just talked about that first third down of the game where his command is great. You know, his check is great. And we got to get it and execute it. And then we got to see how that can play out after that. But you know, all of those things have to be on us. They got to be on us as coaches. It's got to be on us as players. It's got to be on us as the quarterback, the head coach, all of us. So, like, we take all those things, you know, not lightly. Those are things that we have to go out there and be able to execute every single week. And, like, the last 2 weeks, it'd be hard to talk about the command of it all, you know, with the percentage that we had on third down. But, you know, we start off early in the season. It was really good. And we've kind of fallen off in the last couple of weeks, at a historic fashion.
Hmm. Is he speaking about anyone or any ones in particular there? We can certainly try to decipher that. Mm-hmm. Potentially a guy that's been a perennial disappointment. I don't know. One more before we get out of here. Raheem Morris, oh, man. Okay, he tried to explain what happened with the timeout non-call at the end of the half.
We could have let him rush out there and go to try to kick it and try to make it and, you know, make it under pressure, but it felt like a gimme for him. It felt like something that was going to be pretty easy for him. We felt like we can get some more time for our offense to go out there. And if we get that big completion to Mooney that we dropped and we can get another one, we might be having a different conversation right now.
Okay. So why didn't you do it, Coach? I don't really think he answered the question there. He said Indy was too good. I don't really get it. Am I missing something, Garrett? I don't really understand his explanation there.
Yeah, this is the one at the end of the game when they were going to give themselves an opportunity. They wanted to give themselves.
Oh, timeout at the end of the game.
This is the end of the game.
Okay, I thought he was talking about the end of the half. I was like,
no.
Okay.
No. He was asked about that, but no. This is the explanation for the end of the game, and then he still had two timeouts in his pocket, and then Darnell Mooney drops that pass on
first down. Yeah, and then they gave up.
They didn't have anything at that point.
They could have done anything. I mean, they had two timeouts. You could have run if you were quick about it and you had something, which they didn't. You could have gotten two plays off.
Maybe.
What was it? Zane Gonzalez is going to go.
I don't even know what's Zane Gonzalez's long in the NFL. I don't think it's very long.
I mean, even if it's 55,
I don't think he's had a 55 yarder.
I mean, you could try.
You can try a lot of things.
Anything's better than what they did. Let's put it that way, which is take a 10-second runoff penalty and screw the whole thing up with timeouts left in your pocket. I think we can safely say that. All right, 404-726-0929. Again, not exactly confidence building from Raheem, but we'll let you hear a little bit more from him before we get out of Dodge at the end of the hour. Coming up next, you want all the latest news on the Falcons, injuries, performances, what's going on inside the walls at Flowery Branch. Got you covered next. Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Back with you here on 92.9 The Game is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Right now, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, unfortunately, only one place to start this evening, and that is with QB1. That has been the main and driving force of conversation after the game. He goes 12 for 28, looks absolutely solemn in the post-game press conference and with our very own Dave Archer. So what did you make of his performance? What went wrong? What did you see that he was not seeing and diagnosing on the field on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally understandable place to start, right? And unfortunately, it's kind of like some of the things that I expected going into the season are playing out, but they're playing out in not like the worst times possible, but just you look at the red zone, for instance, right? For the first 6 weeks or 7 weeks, they were moving the ball really well. And then some of the, I think, inconsistencies, whether that is throwing the football, the communication kind of coming from the sideline up in the box, like getting that relayed into the huddle, then getting out, and all of that stuff. When you're dealing with a young quarterback who's only played 11 games, right? And I know to anybody who wants to make the counter Michael Penix argument, that's going to sound like, okay, you're making all these excuses for him. But bear with me for 1 second, right? He is still a rookie in the NFL. And all of the college reps that he played matter, but this is a new league and a new sport and all of that. So I expected these inconsistencies. I expected some really great moments from Michael Penix, and I expected there to be some moments where you kind of scratch your head and you say, okay, let's see how it looks the next time around. And that has been the story, I think, of this season. A lot of that has to do with some of the defenses they're playing. I think some of that has to do with the offense and getting in tune with the guys around him. And that was why I wanted to pose the question to Raheem Morris yesterday, because specifically I feel like the area that I have locked into on this are when he's facing pressure, which he did a lot against the Colts, right? Is those zero blitzes, those kind of simulated pressures. normally what I'm used to seeing in those situations is, okay, you identify the pressure, you make the check for the blocking, you keep the back end, what have you, but then you've also got that hot route, right? You've got the quick slant, you've got a flat route, like anything to get the ball out of your hands fast. And I feel like that's the part that I haven't seen yet. So I asked Raheem, you know, are you comfortable with these alerts, the hot checks, all of that? And he seemed to, and this was the theme kind of yesterday, say, yeah, I think Mike has a really good handle on what we're asking him to do there on that part of the offense. We've got to get the guys around him on the same page. So I think it's easy to look at Mike as the kind of like focal point of this because he has the ball in his hands. And he's a rhythm thrower too, Chris. I don't think so many people realize this. He's like fifth or sixth in the percentage of throws on rhythm this season. He's like right behind Matthew Stafford, which, you know, there's a comp for you. But to me, that means that he needs the guys to be in the right spot when they're going to be there. He needs the offensive line to kind of hold up for some of these deep dropbacks, X, Y, and Z. It's like he wants to throw the ball in rhythm. So I think that does put a lot of onus on the other 10 guys around him. And yeah, it didn't look great at times on Sunday, and that's for them to figure out. But I don't think I'm totally surprised by it, and I don't think it means that Michael Penix Jr. is a problem or is not the answer for the Falcons moving forward. It just means he's a young quarterback who's getting used to life in the NFL.
Okay, so with all of that setting the table, how much of everything you just said do you feel falls on Michael Penix Jr. himself? Essentially, how far behind the eight ball do you think he is based on where we thought he could be 9 games into the season, whether that's preparation, whether that's doing what he needs to do to be ready on game day, whether that's film study, or how much of it is on the coaching and not being able to get him up to speed and where he needs to be? Because I think that's really the main debate that's going on right now.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's not like up to speed. It doesn't look like he's over his skis or anything to me. Like he looks like he can run an offense. There are absolutely some plays where, yeah, like some of the intentional groundings, right? Like that's a good example probably, because I think it's fair to say that that has been a little bit of an issue with, all right, you're in pressure. You're kind of like trying to avoid a sack, which is great. But then where's that next level of awareness? That stuff doesn't necessarily change overnight. That it takes a lot of time. It takes some reps. It takes experiences in those moments. So when you're looking at kind of the coaching and the player and the preparedness of all of this, there have been a lot of moments where the play has been there and for whatever reason, either the ball hasn't gone in that direction or it has, and it was a great throw and it was dropped, or maybe the case like with Kyle Pitts and the potential touchdown, it's slightly off. Right. And in that situation, you could say, yes, Michael Penix underthrew the ball. But I would venture to say that there are 31 other starting quarterbacks around the NFL who from time to time are going to underthrow a deep ball. That's not going to make me say Michael Penix Jr. can't throw the deep ball. It's going to make me look at, OK, that play, he didn't have it. Could Kyle Pitts have jumped up and maybe made a contested grab the way Drake London might? Yeah, he probably could. So that is where, as a coach, you take that, then you work on those two guys, and then the next time they're in that situation, you hope to see the change. So I've kind of felt like they've had game plans that have presented opportunities for them. If you're looking at the macro, the run versus the pass and how they're producing there, yeah, like you can see trends, right? They're clearly identifiable. I just kind of think it comes back to they're not hitting the key plays in the key moments. And that is going to make you lose some games. And then it's the inconsistency of a young player with, you know, a lack of time with kind of some key guys like Darnell Mooney and whatnot. So, I don't think there is a clear answer here, Chris. As tough as that is and as unsatisfying as that is also life in the NFL.
No, you're 100% right. As we're talking with Will McFadden, senior writer and editor of AtlantaFalcons.com. With the defense, it's almost sort of the same thing. The Jekyll and Hyde of it, Will, is so unfortunate. The offense can't sustain drives, can't get in rhythm. The defense has to be on the field for so much more time. The time of possession is completely lopsided the last couple of weeks. So you get 7 sacks, which is great, but then you allow Jonathan Taylor to get almost 300 all-purpose yards it's partly because of the defense's fault, but honestly, it's also part because of the offense and their inability to sustain on third down and stay on the field.
That, absolutely. You hit the nail on that. It was funny. I was in the middle of recording our post-game pod, Falcons Final Whistle, with Torrey McElhaney, and it was kind of like in that moment, I don't know, I was watching the game, obviously, but it was kind of like then I did the box score check, and it like hit me in real time. I was like, oh my God, the Colts had how many yards? Jonathan Taylor had how many yards? Like, I know that 83-yard run counted for a lot, but it felt like the box score was not indicative of the vibe that I got from Atlanta's defense early on in that game, which was, man, they're going toe-to-toe with the league's best offense here, right? And they are imposing their will in some ways, and the pass rush is getting to Daniel Jones. But like you said, over the course of a game, this is why coaches are so, serious about stressing the three-phase complementary football nature of it, is because the way the offense was unable to sustain longer drives and pick up third downs. Yeah, Atlanta's defense was on the field, I think, 70 plays. That's too many, and especially in a game that's going to come down to the wire and go into overtime, the advantage totally swings in the favor of the offense that is going up against the more tired and just like the defense that's been out there on the field all game long. So 100% agree with you there. I think the defense is not an issue. They've been a really good surprise, but they cannot be out there for 70 plays. And I do look back at the offense being unable to sustain some of those drives as a reason.
I got to admit, I thought there was a real chance that the Falcons would have an interim special teams coordinator after what happened in that game and in Berlin versus Indy. Three separate drives started on your side of the 50, which is just inexplicable. This is not the first time that's happened with kick coverage. Marquise Williams, known as a good coach around the league, but it seems like for whatever reason, maybe partially due to the new rules, Will, special teams is really struggling right now.
Yeah, for whatever reason, that has been the case. And you can look at it, it's not just the coverage units, right? Jamal Agnew not getting, I think, the number of returns the level of return that he would want. That Marquise would want. I do believe Marquise is a good special teams coach. Like, looking at what his totality of work here in Atlanta has been. I mean, think back to the Raiders game last year on Monday Night Football. You get two blocked punts. I know one didn't really count as a punt, but like, who cares? You got a hand on the ball. In my book, that's a block. So we have seen the good from a Marquise Williams unit. But yeah, for whatever reason this year, there's the leaky yards on kick and punt returns. There's the lack of kind of your own explosive plays. And then, of course, you know, the field goal kicking and kind of those journeys throughout this season. So it is like, that's a little bit, I think, of the Falcons are right there and they have not been able to break through or get over that hump in some of these games because, more often than not, I think it's fair to say two of the phases have let them down, whether it be offense and special teams or defense and special teams or offense and defense. Like, you need two of the three, and sometimes you need all three. And more often than not, I think the Falcons have really only had one phase clicking at a time, and that's not going to lead to many wins. So, yeah, I don't know what the answer is on special teams because I don't know enough about special teams. But I agree with you that this has not been what they expected or what I expected at all.
Before I let you go, I know it's radio and I'm subject to hyperbole as nature of my job here on 92.9 The Game. But, Will, it is anything but must win, I think, is an unfair characterization for this game on Sunday in order to keep the season alive. I don't see any other way about it. They need to get this one, snap the losing streak, get back on track, and keep their very, very small, but the window is technically still open to get a playoff berth.
Yeah, it feels like that. If for no other reason, prove it to yourself, you know, right? Like, this is a team you know well who gave you still probably your worst loss of this season. Here's a chance for a little bit of revenge to kickstart, hopefully, a second half run. No, they're not going to be mathematically out of it, but you're going to now be 0-3 in the division. the Panthers are going to have a clear lead on you in the wild card race. The NFC looks pretty loaded right now when you look at the playoff picture, the West and the North especially. So it's going to be tough. I think the next three games, that stretch, Chris, like that's going to tell you everything you need to know. But obviously it starts on Sunday.
We'll appreciate the time. As always, we'll check you out at AtlantaFalcons.com. We'll talk soon.
Of course. Anytime, Chris.
All right. That is Will McFadden there. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 10 o'clock here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Jason Longshore comes your way then. Big news going on today with the press conference for the National Women's Soccer League team for Atlanta. Gee, I didn't realize this. They're not going to get underway until 2028.
Takes a while.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Starting
they announced
from the ground up.
They announced that Atlanta United was getting a club, I want to say 2015, something like that. It took a couple of years.
All right. Well, still, that's something that'll be fun. That'll be something to look forward to. Hey, Garrett, you want to call some women's soccer matches?
Hey, man, if they pay the bills, you say the word.
Yeah, man. G-Chap on the mic for your – they don't have a name yet, right? I don't think they do.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so. They gave him a name.
Maybe what are we calling him?
Ooh.
Well, that could be your first question. I don't know.
Okay, well
– think about it. I'll come to it last.
Can we play off this? Like, Atlanta United is the five stripes. Like, could we do, like, the five crosses? Like, is there like, a tangible connection point there? There's so many the Atlanta Peaches? Is that derogatory?
I don't know if it is. I don't know. I think it's perfectly apropos.
Yeah, I'll think about it. All right, let's get to a producer six-pack.
All right, so look, the Falcons are not in a good situation here. I figured that we were going to be doing a heavy Falcons show, and I was correct. So when I actually started putting together some of these questions, I said, how am I going to deal with something that upsets me? Because the Falcons have been, you know, pretty upsetting here this season.
Drinking helps.
We'll get to that here in a second. But as far as my levels of dealing with, you know, not grief necessarily, that may be a bit extreme. I think the Falcons have pushed me to grief one time, and I don't want to talk about that night. This is something that you could do, you know, as a reaction. So first question. What is your comfort show? The comfort show that you can put on when you're going to bed, maybe something that you just need to chill out, something that you want to just put on the screen and not worry about it. What is that comfort show for you?
The show that, because I've seen all the episodes so many times, like the show that I could just put on a random episode and try to take a nap to is South Park.
Great one.
Love
I like
that
South Park.
Because I've seen all the episodes enough that like I don't need to like focus in hard on what's going on because I already know. So it's just like, oh yeah, there's that funny joke. Like it's very easy for me to like drift off while I'm watching it. Whereas another show like that actually requires you to pay attention will keep you up.
That's true. And that's exactly what I talk about. So The Office is one for me. That's an obvious one.
Parks and Rec.
It's very similar. Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Are there two shows like The Office and Parks and Rec that are just intertwined like those two are?
They're so similar.
Is it because they were on at the same time?
They had
moderate
New Girl's overlap.
Kind of in that realm?
No, New Girl's not in that realm.
No, not in popularity, just in era.
No.
I'm talking about an era.
Okay. No, I mean, Office was before any of those. No, I think Parks and Rec came out, 2010, maybe?
Was it that late?
Yeah, and it was several years after The Office was through its heyday. So after it had already peaked, I'd say it peaks around like season 4, 5, 6 or so.
Well, when Michael Scott.
And then once Michael's gone, and I think that's season 9, I want to say.
I think they did two full seasons without him.
They did one full season without him.
One full season without him?
But they did a couple episodes at the end of a season.
And that was when they had like Idris Elba, Will Ferrell.
Well, they had Idris Elba much earlier. So they had Idris Elba in like season 4 or something like that. That's when they got Will Ferrell in.
Will Ferrell, David
and
Kickner.
That was, and I still remember that was like 09 or something, maybe 10, 11, something like that. I remember seeing the ads for it and having Will Ferrell in it. And I still remember being like in middle school, high school that age. And I'm like, this is weird. It's weird. I don't like that.
For me, also like other animated shows, I can kind of do that too, like American Dad or Family Guy.
Family Guy is one of those.
One of those. Just because I've seen all the, like, it's, as long as it's a show where I don't feel like I'm missing out on any key information.
Well, a show like that is also intentionally mindless. It's not supposed to be all that, you know, brain heavy.
It's just watch and enjoy.
It's just turn it on and then
Rick
move
and,
on.
Rick and Morty maybe is in that category.
But that's what some people do. Some people turn on a TV show. Some people go to food. So as far as a comfort food, what's your comfort food?
Pasta.
I love pasta.
Oh, yeah. Carbs.
Red or white?
Penne. Alla vodka is my favorite pasta dish. But I grew up, luckily, my step-grandpa was a very good cook from Italy. So I got the homemade sauce. We had Sunday dinners with the pasta and meatballs and the garlic
and
bread.
And the meatball.
Oh, and the ricotta cheese. Oh, it was so good. I miss it so much.
I've got an Italian fiance, and she makes that
she can
very
cook?
Well.
Oh, yeah. You are.
Oh, she can cook great.
You are.
Oh, it's
lucky,
wonderful.
Lucky man.
I put on several pounds since we've been together. Let's just put it that way.
That just means you're happy.
Oh, that's true.
That just means you're happy.
She does a fantastic. And I'm a pretty good cook myself.
Are you going to do a shredding for the wedding?
I got a little time. But yeah, probably. You know, get kiss the muscle there.
Yeah. Have that suit fitting nice and tight. No love handles sticking out.
Yeah, I got a little ways to go. I got a little work I got to do. All right, so you got a comfort shell, you got a comfort food, but as far as a beverage that you might indulge in, I might go a little brown liquor, get a little bourbon action. That's my cup of tea. You hear the voice.
Whiskey makes me sad, so I will not. If I am sad,
I respect that.
If I'm already sad,
it pushes you
I'm
in the direction that you're feeling.
Yeah, like it's if I'm all tequila is my happy drink.
I love tequila.
But I am a humongous. Some of you know this already. I am a huge beer snob.
I love beer.
I love all the breweries and all the high. I love high percentage alcohol beer.
Okay,
like Golden Monkey, Voodoo Ranger. Those are in my range. Your 9-10 percenters.
I can indulge in those as well. That's pretty commonplace.
Yeah,
a nice Saturday afternoon. I'm drinking a Tropicália or something.
Yeah,
like
the best part of those, you need like two or three and you're good.
Yeah,
like I've never in my ever Garrett understood the people. Even when I was in college and I was in a fraternity, I always saved up extra money during the week to make sure that for Saturday night parties, I was able to get something I enjoyed and I wasn't drinking water beer out of a keg.
See, a Natty Light is something I can appreciate. It was something that I generally did not do. I would bring the Sweetwater 420s.
See,
that's what
I
brought.
That's a real beer.
Yeah,
but the thing is,
I'd bring my own. And I went to a dry county, so Georgia Southern at the time was a dry county in Bullitt County, and you have to bring beer or wine, or you have to drive like 30, 40 minutes away to Metter to go get your liquor. So it was always beer. It was always wine. And so I kind of dove into the whole beer thing.
You want to know what's funny? I literally couldn't have had the more opposite experience. I worked at a liquor store while
in
college.
That?
I was everybody's best friend because I was 18, 19 years old.
Oh, God.
And at the end of the day, they would shut off all the security cameras. So
you make some friends.
Go get whatever you need, kid.
Yeah. Go grab it. Hurry up.
Yeah. Well, I think the statute of limitations on that has got to be over.
No, you're fine. I don't think anybody can improve anything at that point.
But shout out to my old bosses at the liquor store.
But to the question, though, like what is your go-to? What's the comfort beverage?
Yeah, I'd say probably right now, probably Voodoo Ranger IPA.
Okay. Okay, yeah. That's a good one. I like a Voodoo Ranger. Voodoo Rangers, that's a heavy beer. Yeah, that is
a very heavy beer. But the thing is, you need two of them, three of them, and you're
that's
good.
That's true. That's fair.
I've never been one of those people who's like, yeah, I'm going to sit down on a college football Saturday and erase a keg or a case of Miller Lite. Like, no, I ain't doing that, man. I feel you feel so bleh when you do that.
Yeah. Especially the next day.
Oh, my goodness. You
the next day is
so
always tough.
Full and bloated and... Blech.
That's why you use a glass. You got to pour it out into a glass, man.
No, man. I'm not. There's no scenario in which you need to be drinking. I can drink in three beers what takes you 15 if you're drinking one of those sorts of things.
All right, moving on. That's number one, number two, number three. Number four is, have you ever been so stressed from a game that you need to take a break, like take a walk, get out of there? What's that game that pops in
your head? It was the 2004 ALCS.
I didn't go your way, though.
No. It certainly did not. Mm-mm. When Dave Roberts stole the base and Johnny Damon hit a grand slam off Andy Pettit, yeah, Yeah. I mean, everybody who's listening to me right now is going, ha ha, Turtle, you suck. You grew up in New York. Yeah, that sucked. I ain't going to lie. 2001 was rough too, but I was a little young. I was like 10.
The Diamondbacks.
Yeah, that was I was like 10.
Was it Randy Johnson?
And Curt Schilling with the bloody sock. And then
well, that 2004 was the bloody sock.
And then, but Curt Schilling was on the Diamondbacks in 2001 as well. And then they had 2003 too against the Florida freaking Marlins.
Hey, man.
Josh Beckett.
Oh, shoot. What was the name of that?
Single-handedly shut them down.
Oh, shoot. What's his name? Dontrell Willis?
Yeah. Yeah. D-Train.
D-Train, that's
it. He had the crazy high leg kick
wind-up. He was on the cover of MLB The Show or something like that that year. He was awesome. I just remember thinking I was a kid growing up playing baseball, and I used to think he was so damn cool.
Best.
The hat was like kind of the side.
Yeah, he had the side thing.
Oh,
he
did
the CC Sabathia before.
It's to the two. It's the two. They've been to two postseasons, not including that COVID season where they opened up the extra postseason spot, and they went to it. They won a World Series both times. It's crazy to think about that. They've never won a division title.
Best baseball video game ever, MVP Baseball 2005.
That's
it's not
so
up,
much fun.
It's not up for debate.
I think my brother has. He still has that one.
Yeah, it's the best.
He goes back
it's
and
the
plays.
Best baseball video game ever.
I think his
and
guy has 125 soundtrack. Home runs.
Yeah, and it's got the best soundtrack
it's
ever.
Nuts. No, I like that one. Not including the Super Bowl from 2016, where I basically was in a depressed stupor for several days. This was the. It was the Atlanta Braves when they played the Dodgers in that 2021 matchup.
Yeah. Yep.
They gave up all those runs in the first inning, and the game just kind of like went off. Ugh, it was terrible. No, it was 2020. That's what it was.
It's what the Braves did to the Astros in the final game of the World Series.
Well, not to that level. This was the one that the Braves just got absolutely annihilated, and it was over very quickly. All right. Let's go. So those are your four things, your four comfort things, but I got two more questions. So you got to think about the next step. You kind of slept on it, and you got to think about what's going to give you hope for the next sign. So let's put it this way. Which young player in Atlanta gives you the most hope? So let's say Drake Baldwin, Zachary Richichet, or Jalen Walker, or other, but one of those three or other.
Most hope. Which one can have the quickest, biggest
Drake
impact?
Baldwin, of course, just won the rookie, of the,
won
year.
Rookie of the year.
Zachary Richichet, the number one overall pick. Jalen Walker just had two sacks.
Right,
he's had three sacks in the last two games, plays for the Falcons, does a very good job. Georgia Bulldog, stuff like that.
I'm going to say Jalen Walker because of his impact on the unit overall. When he's on the field, they're a different team. And when he's off the field, much like Divine Diablo. So, because Drake Baldwin is still going to split time with Murph next year. Richichet's not playing great right now.
Richichet's still a former number one overall pick.
But he's not playing well right now.
Jalen Walker's not a bad answer, though. Georgia Bulldog playing for the Falcons.
That's where I would go.
That's fair. I know. I like that one. All right, last one here for you. Falcons are closer than we think.
No. I mean, have you been listening to the show you produced tonight? Derek?
I wrote it before the show.
No.
I was writing it in. Whatever.
They most certainly are exactly.
But I gave a positive, and I gave the positive thing. You've got Jalen Walker. You got James Pierce. You got Xavier Watts, Billy Bowman.
There's a lot.
Four rookies on this team who I think have been absolutely tremendous. And I mean,
Drake London's emerged as a top five receiver. There's a lot to be excited about.
Now you got
to
go pay that guy. Yeah, you know, and that's a good thing.
Bijan and Matt Bergeron.
By the way, anybody out there who's complaining about having to pay your really good players, that's good. Pay the guy.
Well, the reason Kyle Pitts is not, even if Kyle Pitts was
Kyle's going to get franchise tagged at most, but he's not going to be.
I don't think so. But even if he had an all-pro season, he was never coming back because they got to pay Drake, as you said, Bijan, and Matthew Bergeron.
Yep.
There's no money. There's no money to pay Pitts to. All right, great job, G, filling in for Oren tonight. That'll do it for this edition of Chris Thomas Tonight. I will talk to you all tomorrow, 6 o'clock, right here on 92.9 The Game.